Nora Brown is a teenager from New York City who sounds like she grew up in the hollers of Appalachia. I'm sure she would consider that a compliment because her latest release, Sidetrack My Engine, just released a few weeks ago, is an old-time time capsule. And I'd like to welcome Nora to 9 Volt Heart. How are you?
Hey, how are you? I'm doing great.
Great. Well, thanks for taking some time. It seems like a certain geographical area has become your focus musically, the Eastern Kentucky and Eastern Tennessee. How did that particular sound or the scene come to your attention?
Well, I'd have to say that it kind of started with Lee Sexton, who is an incredible banjo player from Lion Fork, Kentucky. And I, at the Cliff Top Music Festival in I was competing in a banjo competition, and I played one of Lee's songs, Shady Grove, I believe. Uh-huh. And the announcer, his name is Sam Linkus, and he was like, Nora, you gotta go talk to my friend Lee and learn that from him directly. And so we kind of decided to act on that, and he gave us some information on how to get down there and meet some people who could help take us there. And me and my dad went down and met some people around the area, and one of Lee's friends took us out to see Lee. And then eventually I started going down there a little more often after meeting some people in the area for some festivals and for a camp called Cowan Creek Mountain Music School. Mm-hmm. And that's in the area. And just being down there and learning directly from some Eastern Kentucky folks, I started to get more involved in that particular style of music, which I would say is, it's got a pretty unique sound and some qualities that kind of set it apart, in that, especially for what I do as a solo banjoist, there's a lot of solo banjo music that comes from the area. As you know, that I'm not saying that there's not solo banjo music in other places, but specifically in Eastern Kentucky, there's a lot of like singing and solo banjo, which is what I do. So it ended up, there are a lot of songs that from that region that I feel really suit me, and I really enjoy it a lot.
Excellent. Great answer. I'm afraid Lee Sexton is like, he was in his 90s probably when you were dealing with him. He is now passed. But do you do you have folks that you go visit still?
Well, Lee passed away earlier this year during COVID time, so I haven't been down there since COVID started, but I do plan to. And yeah, there's a couple other folks down there that I've learned some music from. John Haywood, who's a great banjo player, and he's also a tattoo artist. But yeah, one of the best banjo players I know. He's crazy good, and I've learned a lot of music from him. And also his teacher, George Gibson, who is more Lee's era, an old master of the music. I visited George a couple times and learned some music from him too as well. So I do plan to go back down there, learn some, play some, and say hi to some folks I haven't seen in a while.
Excellent. Now, this is your second release on Jalopy Records in New York City. The first release, Cinnamon Tree, was produced by the legendary bluegrass pioneer Alice Girard. How did that association come about?
I don't know if I recall. I mean, I think probably I went down to Floyd, Virginia, which is, okay. So I recorded the album in Floyd, with Joe Bass, who's a great recording, artist. And I believe he introduced me to Alice. Mm-hmm. We went over to her house one day, and it was pretty much in association with the album, asking if she would be able to produce it. But, I'm thinking that's how it started.
Yeah.
But I spent a lot of time with Alice before making the album. We went out to her friend's cabin, which was out on a river, and we did just a lot of focus work on my singing voice, actually. Uh-huh. And which was really cool. She's helped me so much. And really with my singing voice, but also actually taught me how to drive a golf cart, which still haven't put that to use as much as I would like to, living here in the city. But you know. Yeah. It is a handy skill.
Yeah.
But yeah. Alice, it's an honor to work with her and to call her a friend. Yeah.
Now, my friend Tatiana Hargraves also hangs out with Alice these days as well, and Chris Brashear, who lives here in Amherst, is actually recording with her as well. So we love Alice Girard as well as Hazel Dickens. All their work was really pioneering. So this September, you released the latest EP, Sidetrack, and it's also recorded in Brooklyn, but this happens to be a unique space, both sonically and personally for you. Fill us in on the rather unusual location.
Yeah, so my parents are in the food business. They actually age cheese, so we have these I have access to these old lagering tunnels which cheese is aged, but however there are some available empty tunnels that have been used for music in the past. I actually recorded a Tiny Desk video in there, and also mm-hmm. we had a music series for a while every other month that artists who were coming through town would be able to came down and played a set, and there was food and it was very enjoyable, but tight space, so that hasn't happened in a while. But yeah, so it's a very, very unique space. It's like if I can sort of paint a picture, it's all brick and there's these giant arches and you're kind of in this long, thin tunnel, big arches. It's cold, it's damp down there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I would say that the combination of this cool but, you know, unique tunnel, along with it was like also the recording devices that we used. I recorded with Big Tone Records, and our friend John was coming through town, and this is kind of how the recording process started, is that he was coming through town to record some Jalopy people, and we were like, you know, why not? So he has this amazing old equipment, these big reel-to-reel machines that mm-hmm. he records, you know, straight from the old machines to a computer, so there's no like in between or anything. It's like very raw and just it's very similar to a lot of recordings done in the early recording days when that's how things were being recorded.
Yeah.
But anyways, so this unique space was also very difficult to record in with that equipment because it probably thrives best in a more controlled environment. And with this, like, all the sound is bouncing everywhere. And I don't really understand this stuff. This is something that I hear people say. The sound is bouncing everywhere, bouncing up the walls. So that was happening a lot. And in the end, I think that I worked with our friend Joe again to kind of work to master the recordings. And we kind of, I think, hopefully, for the ones that are out, made it kind of use that sound for in a beneficial way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds like an old time recording. It sounds almost like a field recording, but in a good way. And
yes.
So I wanted to ask you, you know, obviously you're playing some shows coming up here. You're playing it at Barbez locally. On December 12th, but then you'll be up in New England at Exeter, New Hampshire Word Barn with a friend of mine, Dory Freeman.
Yes. That I'm should very be excited about that. We're going to do a little, I'm going to visit some schools up there and also play a couple shows, and I'm excited for that very much.
She's from Galax area.
Yes. And also I'm very, very excited to be in, share the bill with Dory.
Yeah. And then you'll be here at Northampton's Parlor Room on the 30th of January, which is a little ways away, but we already have tickets on sale, so I wanted to make sure that we got people interested and aware that it's coming. And, you know, during the last year or so, you've done a lot of live streams. Is that something that you become more comfortable with, like the Passim's one I saw and the Quarantine Happy Hour was a really good one as well. Is that something that, you know, obviously we didn't have any live shows for a while. We are all listening and watching live streams. Is that a environment that you're comfortable with?
I would say, I think it's different and probably more approachable than playing on stage in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it's also difficult because you're not really, you don't get that sort of unconscious feedback from the audience that you can kind of receive when you're in person. But, you know, when you're online, you're obviously not, I feel like there's less pressure, obviously, but mm-hmm. not that that's a bad thing always, but yeah, but in person, I think one thing it's lacking and something that I kind of missed when I was doing that is probably just being able to like see how the audience is reacting to how I'm playing, because that is totally influences my feelings about my performance and also how I continue. So in some ways, maybe it's good that I was had a break from that a little bit and kind of just was kind of working off of my own opinions of how I sound. But I do like to feel what they're feeling. So that was definitely missing. But
yep.
I definitely didn't feel this pandemic as hard as actual professional artists did, because somebody pays for my food and my house. So
So are you still at the Frank Sinatra School of the Arts in nearby?
Yes, I am. Yes, yes.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. And it probably is not that unusual to have a member of the this kind of art school being a banjo player. But it may have been more unusual when you were in middle school. Or did your colleagues or your co-students understand what you're doing and understand that you recorded at age 13 your own album?
Yeah, I mean, obviously now in my art school, there are more people who do art. But yeah, I would say in earlier school experiences, it was definitely something that was different. But yeah, I mean,
you obviously have colleagues your age that are at festivals and at camps and at teaching opportunities. So there's plenty of colleagues, but probably not at your middle school that were doing anything like you were at the time. I wanted to ask you about your banjos. I see a few behind you there. What do you have in your arsenal these days? I heard you had at least three pretty cool ones.
Yeah, well, none of them are behind me in this picture. These are some items that I don't use very often, but mm-hmm. I currently my go-to banjos are, one, my fretted banjo, which is a Gibson Snakehead, mm-hmm. and it is one that I got from a friend, Mark Horowitz, but the pot of the instrument is original, and it's from a while back there.
Yep.
And it's from before that Gibson started making the trapdoor banjo. So people are always like, oh, is that a trapdoor? But it's actually not a trapdoor banjo. It's a little bit before they started making those. And kind of, I think it was kind of, the trapdoor was almost them kind of cutting corners from
okay.
type of banjo that I have. In that the, I don't know if this makes sense just from hearing me speak about it, but basically the rim of the banjo, or just kind of the pot basically, mm-hmm. Is hollow, and it has some interesting tone ring situations happening, which is very cool, but also I think kind of hard to make. So that trapdoor was kind of recreating the sound, but just different structure. And the neck is made by Will Cedars, who's a great banjo maker up in Vermont.
In Vermont, yeah. We met them at the Green Mountain Bluegrass Festival. The Cedar instruments were there. And they gave away an instrument, too, at that festival, which is really cool. Really beautiful things. So tell me about your fretless banjo.
Yeah, so that banjo actually my dad made in a banjo making class with Pete Ross, who is a great banjo maker and historian. And yeah, it's a cool banjo. You don't really expect things that you make in like a in an instructional class to be usable and workable, but this banjo definitely is. And it's really cool. I really enjoy its sound, and I actually had a fretless banjo before that, but something about this one, it's very nice. The only problem is the skin head, and how it's a tack head banjo. My one I had before had some brackets, so it's definitely a tricky one to play in the summer and when it gets rainy.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. Now, do you also have your great-grandfather's, great-great-grandfather's banjo still?
Yeah, I do. Yes, so that banjo is almost like a hybrid between my Gibson banjo and my fretless banjo in that it has frets, but it also has nylon strings instead of metal strings. So this kind of allows me to play songs. Well, when it's a fretless instrument, you know, it's kind of hard to hit correct notes once you get past the fifth, seventh fret. So this instrument allows me to keep that mellow sound that's provided by the nylon strings, mm-hmm. but also I can play some more complicated things. Yeah.
Excellent. So are you bringing all those on tour?
I may not also because I have been playing my guitar recently and I don't know about four instruments on this trip.
Right.
It may happen. It's very likely that I will choose to do that. But also, I might drop the grandfather banjo.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. I haven't decided.
That's fine. No, you still have a month or more, so we're good.
Yes.
So,
preparation.
I've been listening to, I know most of the tunes on this because they're mostly traditional tunes, but I was listening to one, The Very Day I'm Gone, that really incredibly gorgeous vocals that you do. Tell me about the learning curve for all these Southern ballads. And, you know, there's people in North Carolina. I lived in North Carolina for 20 years that were astounding in terms of being ballad singers and knowing all these old ones. Do you go and research all those old ballads? And do you have someone who you train with or you study with for those? Or do you just listen to recordings? How did that interesting subgenre come to your attention, and it really speaks to you, and it really does. Your voice is incredible in that way, and especially I think in Very Day I'm Gone.
Well, yeah, that's an interesting question because I actually took vocal lessons for a while from a friend and a local musician, Allie Deneen. She's an incredible multi-instrumentalist and vocalist, and she's a songwriter too. She's really great. She has music out. You should check it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I took lessons from her for a while, both accordion and vocals, and she taught me a lot of my repertoire of ballad songs that I do. But I also, a lot of the things I do, I've kind of collected from just run-ins with artists. For example, I've learned some of the things that I sing from Elizabeth Leprell of mm-hmm. Anna and Elizabeth.
Yep.
And also, I was at the Ashokan Center a couple summers ago.
Mm-hmm.
To teach. And I took a lesson from Ginny Hawker.
Yeah,
that's Hawker. What I thought. Okay, yeah. I wanted to make sure I got that right. Yeah. But so she is an incredible singing artist, and we did like a little coaching session when we were there. It's been a long time since I've seen her since that camp, actually. But we worked on a couple of tunes, and she taught me a couple of ballads.
Yeah.
But The Very Day I'm Gone, actually, I didn't learn from anyone directly. I learned that from a recording of Anna Elizabeth playing it, but I also kind of gathered it from its original source of Addie Graham, who was a ballad singer from Eastern Kentucky. Yes, yeah, there it is.
Because I recognized it from my Anna and Elizabeth copy, and then I realized, it's actually Addie Graham, and it goes further back, obviously, than just this. But so I guess there are so many old-time tunes. How did you choose this batch? And I hear that there's a volume two or a brand-new album that is recorded at a different kind of location, like St. Anne's Church, where the Brooklyn Folk Festival is.
Yeah. It's true. I'm actually, that's in the works right now. We're kind of finishing up mastering and just kind of putting the tracks together in order, and we're gonna send them out soon to be pressed and stuff. But yeah. So basically, when I did that session in the caves, a lot of the I had a lot of trouble with some of the quieter tracks and a lot of the solo banjo stuff, the really tinkly and quiet harmonic, I don't know, kind of that kind of stuff. I like kind of like Wild Goose Chase, which is a tune that I play. Maybe it's one of the more recognizable ones. But anyway, so I wanted to kind of have a do a session where in a very focused environment where I could really capture that kind of floaty sound that I was looking for. So luckily we had the St. Anne's let us use their space for a little bit, and I went in there and recorded some music with Joe Bass and Eli Smith, the operator of Jalopy Records, came in and was helping out too as well. And yeah, it was really great. There's a lot of solo banjo tunes on there. There's some singing definitely, but I know that sometimes that's a lot less approachable for people who are getting into old time music. But I think it's gonna be cool.
Excellent.
But yes, it may be maybe more geared toward people who are already familiar with the genre.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to thank you for your time, and I wanted to ask you about a particular song that you might give us a little context and a little bit of background, and then go out on that tune. I was thinking the last tune, the kind of medley of Briggs, Hoplite, Hornpipe, and how you came across those, because I'm somewhat familiar because of my Central North Carolina roots with the Carolina Chocolate Drops, and some of those tunes were familiar to me. Tell me how you chose that one, and we'll go out on that tune.
Yeah, well, the first two tunes in that medley of tunes are Briggs Corn Shucking Jig and Camptown Hornpipe. And those two I actually got from a video of Rhiannon Giddens playing them on YouTube. And nice. That is that's where I got them. But yes, the Carolina Chocolate Drops do play those two, and they have the Bones are, I think they recorded it with Bones. And so that kind of gave me the idea to play with Jaron on that, and Jaron is a great Bones player. And then the last tune is Hoplite Ladies, or Miss McCloud's Reel, which I learned at a camp actually. In a way, it's a pretty average version of the tune. It's pretty common, but I think there's like a couple of variations that are kind of unique. But anyways, yeah, so putting them all together, a lot of words, so we kind of combined names there. But Jaron, it was so amazing to have him be a part of the album, and he's just so incredible at literally everything he does. So it was really cool to play those tunes with him.
Super. Well, we're really looking forward to you coming to Northampton on January 30th. We'll make sure to play. I'll be playing all your tunes until then, and look forward to seeing you then. And in the meantime, good luck, and thanks for spending so much time with us.
Yeah, thank you.
back my